Good afternoon. Is everybody settled? All right, well, my name is Ed Yardumian. I'm thrilled to be here supporting the women of California in leadership roles and all around the world, actually. I'm Senior Vice President of Dell Technologies and based here in Santa Clara, and I am a warrior. And that's why it was very exciting for me to choose this session to be able to support this conference. So I work for Dell in the Bay Area, and actually a bunch of the Dell team is here. Dell is, and I share a lot of values with Dell, and that, you know, device adverse and inclusive environment ensures that Dell and the place that we work is a place where people can bring who they really are to the office, and help team members feel like they belong. So, I feel like I belong. Here and actually learning from Amber because I'm about halfway through the book. I am a warrior, and I do feel like we have an amazing session ahead. So let's first by giving a round of applause to Amber Ray. So Amber, so did everyone here attend this morning session? Brené Brown, what did you guys think? So Amber's been called the Brené Brown of wonder, and a millennial motivator. She's been a consultant and ambassador to brands, to CEOs. She's helped a lot of people learn how to kind of find, you know, and leverage the worry in them and kind of use it for good things and find the wonder. And I think that's what I'm enjoying to learn more about from you today. And you've also helped artists, and then you became one yourself and an accomplished one. So we're proud to have you speak to us today. So thank you. Amber.
Hello, everyone. Hello. I'm like, come on, we can't be a quiet room here. How is everyone feeling? Very good. All right. I want to dig a little bit deeper and ask you, how are you really feeling?
Tired.
Sleepy? Tired? Okay. And I ask this question because I love feelings. I study feelings. I'm in the world of feelings. And when we push away, we repress, or we don't tap into how we're really feeling, we're actually pushing away our power. And so today I really want to dive into that feeling space with all of you and see how in there is so much wisdom and so much gifts and so many messages for us when we can create the space to listen. So my intention, I love setting intentions, so my intention with all of us today is to really to create that container, to create that safe space for us to be raw, for us to be real, for us to tune inward, for us to feel deeply, and to see what wants to emerge and come to the surface. We have an hour together today. So I'm going to give you a short intro, a little bit about who I am and what I'm all about. Then we're going to have a talk, an interactive talk and workshop. And then we're going to conclude with Q&A. I am here in service to you. So as burning questions come up, write them down. And we're going to create a bunch of time in the end to really address those. So let's get started. So who am I? I am an author. I published my first book last May called Choose Wonder Over Worry. It was the biggest dream of all the dreams for me, and also the thing that came along with the most worry, fear, and doubt. I like to believe that our own pain can be our purpose, and me really committing to the book was that journey of confronting my own shadow, confronting my own shit, to really move past that fear and that worry and that doubt to bring forth the gift that wanted to be born through me. And that's what I wish for all of you as well. We'll get into that in a bit. I'm also an artist. I love Instagram. If you guys are on Instagram, I like to create, whether it's a small little Insta on how to set boundaries to large 60-foot installations in public spaces. I use art as a vehicle to bring people together, to help us feel less alone, to give us a space to express our truths. I'm also an entrepreneur. I was raised by a badass mama who I watched build a business from nothing, and she really taught me to challenge conventions, take risks, and to put myself out there. And I'm a researcher. As I said, I study emotions, I love emotions, what wakes us up, what holds us back, the things that invigorate us and the things that stifle us, which is much of the topics that I want to explore with you all today. And then as some nice people in the media have called me a real-life Wonder Woman, although unfortunately this is not the costume that I get to wear every day. Much more neutral. But I love this idea and this notion of wonder, especially feelings can feel so heavy. Worry can feel so heavy. And the things we go through, it can be stifling. And so wonder is playful, it's creative, it sparks our imagination. It opens the doorways of our creativity. And wonder is this beautiful tool for self-exploration, for growth, for questioning the disempowering stories that we tell ourselves, and for really stepping into the truth of who we are. A lot of people ask me, how did you get here? How did you get to this work of feelings? And actually, 12 years ago, I was working in Silicon Valley, started my career at Apple, went into tech and startup world. I was in the marketing space. I always loved psychology, but I applied it to brands initially. And as I was rising the ranks or making leaps, I noticed that I always had this voice inside my head shouting really mean things at me. Like, are you good enough? Who are you to say that? What would they think of you? Don't speak up. Don't share your ideas. And on and on and on. Who can relate to that critical voice inside the head? Okay, I see most hands raised. It's a very human thing. So as I was noticing that this voice was holding me back, slowing me down, and having me play small, I one day decided to turn toward that voice and say, who are you and what is your name? And interestingly, the voice responded back, my name is Worry. And I was like, that's kind of weird, but okay, I'm gonna go with this. And Worry is that voice of, who are you to say that? What will they think of you? And on and on and on. And the interesting thing is that as I began to get curious about my worry voice, get curious about where these stories had come from, did I believe I wasn't worthy or did I inherit that from society or someone else? Where did I get the idea that people are gonna call me out or think I'm a fraud? Where are these ideas coming from? As I began to get curious, as I began to wonder, I met another voice, and that voice was wonder. And wonder was there to question worry's disempowering stories. When worry would say, who are you to say that? Wonder would say, well, is that a reflection of your truth? You're here to speak your truth. Or if worry would say, I think that's a terrible idea, don't put it out there. Wonder would say, well, let's just see what's possible. Why not? What's the worst that could happen? And so I started to realize that there were sort of these two. It's almost like I remember those movies, the like angel on my shoulder and then the devil on my shoulder. Sort of felt like I had these two characters that were always in conversation with each other. I remember vividly when I had never created art before, but always felt drawn. I walked into an art gallery in Lower Manhattan, and immediately my wonder voice said, it's time to make some art. To which my worry voice said, art? Who the hell are you to make art? You didn't go to art school. And it was this back and forth, this dialogue. And what I came to realize, and by listening to, turning toward, and getting to know these voices, that there was a lot of work for me to do here. And what happened is that my own mess became my message, and that mess became my life's work and why I'm here with all of you today. So along this journey, as I was exploring my own mess, exploring my own shit, I came across a neurosurgeon at Stanford, Dr. James Doty. And it was the statistic that I learned from him that really just, it hit me in the gut. He said that the average human spends 80% of their time with regret about the past or anxiety about the future. So essentially, the average human is spending about 80% of their time worrying. And at this point, I kind of thought I was alone. I was going through my own inner dramas. But this is what made me realize that this was such a huge, universal, painful challenge that we, so many of us, were facing and going through. 80% of our time is spent worrying. 80% of our time is spent on some story in our head that we're telling ourselves that might not even be true. And that was really the pain that propelled me forward to create what I'm doing today. And I've packaged it into what I want to talk about, which is the 5 myths that stifle our potential. So the first myth is that all worry is bad. Can anyone agree with maybe thinking worry and fear, if we could just shut it down and push it away, life will be better? I hear a little bit of uh-huh. I remember when I began to research worry, I was like, well, if I just get rid of it, things will be great. But the problem is that worry and fear are actually here to protect us and keep us safe from danger. We have a threat mechanism system in our brain, which means any time we're about to do something that could harm us, it'll say, hey, watch out, be careful. If I'm at the edge of the stage, it'll say, whoa, back off. If we're using dating apps, anyone in here using dating apps? Okay, got some hands. If we're swiping right on Tinder and some guy's like, hey, baby, come over right now, worry's probably gonna be like, not a good idea. That is useful. So not all worry is bad because it can protect us and keep us safe. The challenge is that any time we're about to do something novel or meaningful or interesting, it's also going to trigger that same sense of worry because we've never done it before. And worry loves to have control, loves to know what's going to happen. So the key is to really understand what is the difference between worry that is useful and worry that is toxic. So useful worry is when it's actionable and in our control. It's stepping back from the stage. It's not going over to the guy on Tinder's house. It's if we have a deadline next week and we haven't done any preparation. It's beginning to take the steps of what we need to get done. But where the worry where we get stuck is what I call the toxic worry. It's those ruminating, looping thoughts that will spin and spin and spin and paralyze and prevent us from taking action. Who here can relate to those toxic worries? I see a lot of hands in the room. Great, we're going to talk about what to do about those toxic worries. So the first question when worry is coming up that I like to ask myself is there any productive action I can take right now? And if there isn't productive action that we can take, then it is. It's that toxic form of worry. Another stat that really stood out to me is that 85% of what we worry about never actually happens. So we're creating these dramas and these fantasies to create the illusion of control when really they don't actually happen. And honestly, ask yourself, how often have you said to yourself, I'm so glad I worried about that for so long. So glad I worried about whether or not that guy loved me for like 3 years. That was a good, useful part of my time. No. I'm so glad I worried what that person thought of me, and so I didn't put my idea out there. No. So glad I worried that my book was silly and why would anyone care, and therefore didn't begin to write it. No, that was not useful. That was as they say, a misuse of my imagination. And that's where our imagination can go. It can go into worry or it can go into wonder. And so how do we encourage ourselves to move into that space of wonder? I like to greet my worry with wonder, to actually get curious about where the worry is coming from, whether or not I made it or I inherited it, and just get to understand it, get to know it. So a few examples. Let's say that worry, who's here has seen the movie Inside Out? Oh, good, okay. We're going to talk about that more in a minute. But you know how in the movie it's this little girl and she has all these characters in her head. She's got joy and disgust and fear and all of them. So I like to, again, think of worry and wonder like characters in my brain who have voices and they talk and they have opinions and all those things. So as I explain this, worry, the character of worry, is, you know, maybe thinking, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go outside my comfort zone. I'm scared to try something new. I'm not going there. And another way, what wonder might say, if that's the case, wonder might say, well, I get that you're scared. I get that we've never done this before. But ultimately, I value growth, and I value going outside my comfort zone even more. And so what is my next step? Or let's say that worry is saying, I'm not qualified to do that. People might find out about me. Imposter syndrome. Wonder will say, yeah, okay. But ultimately, I'm here to learn and grow. It's more important to me that I try than I not try at all. And so as we can get to know these different, and even labeling the voices as, oh, this is worry talking, oh, this is wonder, our inner critic, our inner coach, we can create more mindfulness around the thoughts that are moving through our system, and we can create more mindfulness in terms of the actions that we take. So just take a moment to think about what is the worry for you been lately? If you have pen and paper, write it down. What's been the loud, toxic worry voice that's been stifling you, that you feel like has been getting in the way? And now that we know what worry is saying, what does wonder have to say about that? What is wonder's opinion? What is wonder's perspective? And this isn't just about shifting from negative to positive or only focusing on the positive. We'll get to that in a minute. But it's about just seeing what other point of view might be even more true than the worry thought that we're having. So maybe if I'm not qualified, that's something, I study emotions. I don't have my master's in psychology. I'm not a neuroscientist. And for a long time, that would really trap me. But what was even more true is I'm deeply curious about this subject matter. And I could meet with the neuroscientists and the psychotherapists, and I could be a translator so that I can make this material more accessible. That was even more true than the fact that I didn't have the degree to be the quote-unquote expert. And so worry and wonder is a way for us to negotiate with our own inner critic and for us to begin to label what these voices are even saying. Does anyone want to share what came up for them with what their worry voice said and what their wonder said? Someone. Yes.
I'm not ready.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And what does wonder have to say about that?
Yeah, that's kind of where I got a little bit, like, I don't know, how do you go outside your comfort zone to know if you're ready or not? Like, how would you, like, how do you do that? Like,
let me phrase this differently. So if your dear friend came to you and said, I'm afraid I'm not ready, mm-hmm. what would you tell her?
Mm-hmm. And then the wonder part would be encouraging myself to just go for it. It would be, I guess, I don't know, trying to get feedback. I don't know. What do you?
Well, not ready. I mean, we could sit around and not be ready our entire lives. I don't know if there's any moment that we are ready. And actually, my belief is the moment we think we're not ready is actually the exact moment that we are. Because we're being called to something. It's, as Joseph Campbell says, the call to adventure. And so as soon as you have the call to adventure, you have the resistance of actually following the adventure. And so the fact that you are even feeling a draw somewhere tells me that there's somewhere you want to go. And the only thing standing in the way is that fear and that resistance. And so, of course, try. You know, take a few steps forward. You can always take it back. I mean, there is no, people often come to me and say, like, am I doing it right? There is no right. And there is no guidebook. We like to pretend that there's this rules of life when really you get to try and see what works for you and you can always adjust and change later. So for me, if it was the worry was I'm not ready, wonder might be like, well, what's one step I can take forward to see what's one step I can take? Because confidence comes through action. So we won't know if we're ready in advance if we're thinking about it. We have to experience that through moving forward. Thank you for sharing. So the second myth, negativity is not allowed here. Good vibes only. Who has ever been in a space where only positivity and happiness and joy was allowed? How good did that feel for you? We are human beings. We are human feelers. Only allowing the good and the positive just is not human. And so I like to think that actually all vibes are welcome. And this takes me to Inside Out, the movie where all the characters of the little girl are brought to life. And I love this scene because on this particular day, it's the first day of school for this little girl. And Joy is like, first day of school, I'm so excited. And then all of a sudden, sadness comes in and is like, I'm so sad. And Joy is like, no, no, we do not have room for sadness on the first day of school. So sadness, we're going to take you and we're going to put you in a chalk circle that you are not allowed to leave. And I love this moment so much because I feel like that's what we often do with our own uncomfortable feelings. Sadness, go in a circle. Anxiety, go in a circle. Fear, go in a circle. Not ready, go in a circle. And we put circles around these uncomfortable things, thinking we can just push them away and that they'll go away. But when we put them in circles, they only grow in size. They only get bigger. They only get louder. And so the thing is that it's not the feelings that are the problem. It's our relationship to them. Shame isn't the issue. Sadness isn't the issue. Fear isn't the issue. It's how we're relating to that fear. It's how we're relating to that shame. It's how we're relating to that sadness. If we're making sadness wrong, if we're making it bad, then that is where the work is. And so it begs the question, how do I cultivate a healthier, a more wondrous relationship with my uncomfortable emotions? And I have a tool that I call playing with the three C's. And I like to think of these three C's as wonder sidekicks. The first C is courage. And courage is the part of us that says, this is uncomfortable, I don't want to go there, I don't know if I'm ready to go there, but I'm going there anyway, because courage requires fear. Courage requires discomfort. We can't call on courage unless we're feeling that discomfort. And so courage is what has us, we hold courage's hands and we walk into that resistance. The second C is curiosity. Curiosity is our investigative sidekick. It's a part of us that says, I'm wondering why I feel this. I wonder where this is coming from. Or I notice this pattern of every time I do this, I feel this way. What's going on there? Curiosity gets curious. What is the message in this emotion? What is it trying to tell me? And then there's compassion, which is just remembering how human we are, that we're all figuring this out. We're all doing the best that we can based on our own level of awareness, and that's perfect as it is. I have a story around this. On my 30th birthday a few years ago, I woke up similar to the little girl on the first day of school. My joy was like, birthday! Pop open the champagne, let's go. And then sadness was like, I'm depressed and don't want to leave bed. And there was this inner conflict of, but it's my birthday and I'm just gonna, you know, push away the sadness and go on because happy, happy, happy birthday. But of course, I'm deep in this work, and so I decide to practice what I preach and open my journal, and I write at the top, dear sadness, it's me, Amber, I'm here, I'm listening, thank you for showing up, what is it that you want me to know? And sadness had a lot of things to say. Lots of things to say. Why have you always been ignoring me? No, on and on and on. And by about the third page of this letter from sadness, sadness said, you're playing small, and I'm sick of it. And I was like, damn, sadness. Showing up with some birthday wisdom. But sadness was right. I was working on so many different projects and not really getting the level of focus and depth that I wanted. I was dying to write this book, but not thinking I was good enough or ready. All the stories. And it was sadness that had me focus, commit, go in all the book, not without the fear, but with the fear and with the anxiety and with the doubt, and to do it anyway. And so I like to think that the reason my book is on bookshelves is because of sadness. So very grateful for sadness. And that's what's possible when we can learn to dialogue and have a conversation with our uncomfortable emotions. Because again, there's wisdom there, there's beauty there, there's messages there for us when we can create the space to listen. And that conversation with sadness I had my birthday was about 7 minutes long. And I can just imagine the months and months and months that I could have kept pushing it off, pushing it away, and how that could have been 7 years of pain or 7 years of ignoring the gifts that have been wanting to be born. So I like to remember that happiness is not about experiencing only positive emotions. Happiness is about embracing the full spectrum of emotions, particularly the challenging, tricky, difficult ones, and realizing that there's so much beauty there too. Is anyone here familiar with the Japanese art of kintsugi? I see a few hands. I love this art. The Japanese art of kintsugi basically takes shattered pottery and pieces it back together with gold lacquer. And the process doesn't hide the cracks or the imperfections or the fact that the pottery shattered. It actually sees those cracks and imperfections as creating an even more unique piece of art that's even more beautiful. And it's a piece of art that never would have before existed. Each piece is an original. And I love to think of this as a metaphor for our lives, because we all have these cracks, these imperfections. And that's actually what makes us an original piece of artwork. And when we can embrace those cracks and embrace those imperfections, then that's where so much of the beauty in life lives. And so my question for you is, what are the cracks that you can embrace? What are the parts of yourself that you have been denying or not allowing? And how can you welcome them in? The third myth is, and this is the one that I see cause the most suffering, is I am my thoughts and my feelings. So if I'm experiencing fear, it must mean I am an afraid person. Or I have anxiety about this situation, so I am anxious. Or I feel sad about that, so I just must be a sad person. When we over-personalize our emotions, rather than realize we are the vessel that the sensations come and go through, that's where so much suffering exists. Feelings, emotions, thoughts, they come in like storms, a bolt of lightning, sometimes sun through the clouds. And that's a fleeting experience. Ancient Greeks actually believed that emotions would come to visit you. So it was like, oh, anger is visiting me today. What is this rage? What message does this rage have for me? Or even the muse is visiting me today. What am I going to create with the muse? Hi, muse. Thank you for coming. Let's play. And they would come to visit. And it was just a matter of stopping and saying, why are you here? What is it you want me to know? And I love this. And I think it's so healthy because it creates distance between ourselves and what we're thinking and what we're feeling. And in that distance, we can be more objective. In that distance, we can see our emotions and our thoughts for what they really are, which is not us. Because we are not our thoughts and our feelings. We are the sensation that experiences them. Temporary messengers. So the key really is to become the observer, to notice. It's almost like you're a witness looking down on your experience and being like, oh, interesting, these are the thoughts present right now. I'm gonna let the thoughts go. These are the feelings coming through me. Okay, I'm gonna let myself feel them and let it move through. Research has shown that sadness sometimes takes 7 seconds to feel. Oh, sadness can move through our system in about 7 seconds. But if we push down that sadness, it could last 70 years. And so if we can just let it move through, be the observer, that's really the key so that we're not the slave to the thoughts and to the feelings. And my favorite tool for connecting and understanding what is the message here? What does this emotion want me to know? Why do I keep feeling this? If I'm anxious, typically it might mean something's out of alignment. What's out of alignment? What message does it have for me? If I'm angry, that means that I'm outraged about something, that something is not okay, a boundary has been crossed. What is that boundary? And so I like to take my emotions out for tea, or sometimes Pinot Noir. And we're in California, I'm very excited to have some Pinot Noir here. And it's the act of saying, hey, like I did with sadness, why are you anger? What message do you have for me? And oftentimes that can look like a journal, or sometimes it can just be me pausing and saying, wait, what is the message here? What am I trying to learn? And I even actually create characters similar to Inside Out, create characters out of my emotions. So I have Grace, the 30-something British woman from London, who's a perfectionist and wants everything in a very neat and tidy box. And Grace loves to show up when I'm writing, and she's like, that is horrible. People are going to judge you. You can't say that. And I have to be like, Grace, time for you to get a massage while I write this. And maybe you could be useful in the editing process, but not right now. So we can create characters out of our different emotions so that we can dialogue, have a conversation, set boundaries, and often hear what they have to say. The fourth myth, I'm alone in what I'm feeling. I so often meet people who feel like they are the only human going through the feelings and the experiences that they are going through, and this is something that I felt for a long time as well. And what I found is that actually it's all the things that make us feel alone or what connect us as humans. Sir Ken Robinson actually said that the great irony of being human is that the fear of failure, the fear of not being enough, is what we think divides us, but it's actually the one thing that really unites us. And so it's when we're feeling alone, that means we're tapping into something universal, something that is a part of the human condition. And that's a moment when we can name what we're feeling to tame it. If we're sitting alone, if we're suffering in silence, it'll spin and grow and expand. But if we can name what we're feeling, oh, right now, you know, I'm feeling alone in these thoughts and whatever it is we're going through, and we can share it with someone that we trust, that's where true connection can really be born. I know Brené Brown was here this morning. Love her. Dying to meet her. And she talks a lot about shame. And the reason why we often don't share what we're feeling when we do feel alone is because we feel so ashamed. And like she says, shame is a social concept. So the only way that we can move through our shame is by sharing it with someone that we trust. So when those achy feelings are coming up for you, just make a mental note right now. Who is that person that you can reach out to? Who's that person that you can trust? Who's that person that you feel really safe to have a conversation with? Those are your people. And myth number 5, everyone else has it figured out except for me. I meet so many people who feel like they are behind, that they are not doing enough, that they are not far along enough, that everyone else has cracked the code of success except for them, when really we're all just figuring it out. I think we have this illusion that success is this fantasy of this straight upward arrow, when really it's a bit of a hot mess. And actually in that hot mess is so much magic, because that's where the wisdom and the learnings and the insights come from. And actually sometimes there's no arrow at all, and it's like this ball of confusion, and I have no idea what's happening right now. But again, as if we can sit in that mess, if we can sit in that discomfort and not make it mean anything, not label it as bad or wrong, then that's where we can uncover a lot of magic. And what I often hear from people is that this is really the space of comparison. This is the space of, are they ahead of me? Am I doing something wrong? And that's what, you know, what worry would say, but wonder would say, listen, this is about you. It's not about comparing yourself to them. It's, where am I compared to myself? Where am I in comparison to where I was last week, last year? And focusing on the self. I want to conclude today with a story about my father. My father was a brilliant singer, songwriter, businessman. My mom claimed that he was the most brilliant man she had ever met. And yet he never faced himself. He never faced his demons. He never faced his feelings. He never faced his discomfort. And instead he chose to numb them through sex and drugs and rock and roll. And when I was 3 years old, he was out for a bachelor party and decided to get behind the wheel of a car under the influence with his best friend in the passenger seat. He fell asleep at the wheel, went under a truck. His best friend was instantly decapitated, and my father was thrown to the back seat, never to regain full consciousness. And people ask me often, you know, why do you do the work that you do? And it's because I think of how much he had to give, how brilliant he was, but how he was afraid of his own brilliance and how he's afraid of his own shadows. And so he got in the coma. He was in a coma for a year after the accident, and then in a care center, basically brain dead until I was 12 years old. And so it was in those fundamental years that I began curious of, why did he make those choices? Why is he, you know, the way he is? Why did he decide to get behind the wheel? And I remember the moment that my mom came into my room to tell me that he had passed, and I was 12 years old. I can remember exactly. I was wearing this pink jumpsuit, carrying a ponytail. I was journaling on my bed, and my mom came in to tell me the news that he had passed. And I instantly felt enormous relief that he could finally rest in peace, because it felt like he was just suffering in between for so long. And then I felt anger. I felt anger for all the gifts he had to give, but didn't. And I wrote in my journal, after hearing the news, don't die with your gift still inside. And this became the rallying cry for my life. And it is why I'm here on stage with all of you. Because you all are a gift. And you are the gift. And you have gifts within you. And it's my mission and purpose that you can express them and live them out fully. There's a book by Todd Henry called Die Empty, and he speaks about this as well. And he says, the most valuable land in the world is not Manhattan, or the oil fields of the Middle East, or the gold mines of South Africa. The most valuable land in the world is in the graveyard, because in the graveyard are buried all the unwritten novels, never launched businesses, unreconciled relationships, and all the things that people thought I'll get around to that tomorrow. One day, however, their tomorrows ran out. So my question for you is, what is the gift that wants to come through? What is the life that wants to be lived? What are the truths that want to be expressed? What is the you that wants to be embraced so that you can fully express all of who you are in the time that you have here? Thank you. So if we want to do Q&A, I'd love to answer your burning questions. So there's two mics right there if anyone has a question. Well, this is a shy crowd. We had like 50 questions in the last session. Questions?
Can you tell us about a time where you faced a really difficult failure and how you responded to it?
Yes. So I'd say one of my biggest failures, in my mid-20s, when I decided to leave tech and the corporate world and pursue this different path, I decided to create something called the Bold Academy, which was a life accelerator program sort of modeled after Y Combinator and those different tech accelerators. I thought, why isn't there one for your life? And so created that with my best friend at the time, who I was also secretly in love with, problem number one. And we went and we built this business and we built it fast and we got 30 people to live in a house with us in Boulder, Colorado for 30 days. It was insane. And I had a boyfriend to make him jealous, and it was all types of hot relationship mess. And then, because of miscommunication between him and I, we ran out of money halfway through the program. We had 13 staff working for us that we suddenly couldn't pay, and we're mid-program, and people are waiting for us to fulfill out the program, and we're trying to handle it behind the scenes. And I felt like an epic failure of how could I let this happen? How could I let my relationship desires get in the way of what I'm creating for people? And it was not good. I ended up going and borrowing, it was like we were $30,000 short, so I ended up going and borrowing $30,000 from different mentors to pay back within 6 months. But even though like the program was a success, people had success come out of it, we were able to pay the staff and all of that, I felt enormous shame and felt like I was a failure, that I messed up, that I am a mess up. I know Brené Brown talks about this a lot, where shame is the difference between shame and guilt is I'm a failure and, oh, I failed at that thing. Or I messed up, so I'm a mess up, versus that just didn't work out. And so I very much fell into the category of this must mean I am all of these terrible things. And so the work really was around learning that failure isn't personal. Failure is realizing that, oh, I learned. I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to do that differently. And I'm going to iterate and grow. And so it's shifting from failure, meaning, yeah, I'm a failure, to just, that thing didn't work out. Let's try it again differently next time.
Thanks for sharing your story about your dad, first of all. I had a question, and then I'm like, now I'm too stunned to ask. But thank you for that. What I was going to ask before your beautiful story is, how would you bring this story or your message about feelings if this room was full of men? Or how would you connect with them if there were hundreds of men in this room instead of hundreds of women who are maybe predispositioned to get it?
Yeah. Well, I actually work with a lot of men as well. And I find that women have a safe space to talk about their feelings a lot more than men do. And so I feel like men need it even more sometimes. And men especially, men and women have different feelings that grip them. Men often, it's a lot of shame and frustration. Women, it's perfectionism and worry. And, you know, so it's interesting to understand the different ones. But I mean, I probably wouldn't make the message that much different, personally. Is that was your question?
But it's, yeah, if you would or not. Yeah, I didn't know what you were going to say. So
yeah, I mean, I think that questions are doorways. So the doorway that I think to take that is that men need this too. And men need safe spaces to be able to talk about their feelings. My fiance, his mom's here with me in the beginning, my future mother-in-law. And he goes to a men's group every Tuesday. And they sit and they talk about what they're going through and what they're feeling. And it's been, because when I first met him, you know, he was like, he knew two things, sadness and anger. And he also didn't know how to feel the feeling, so he wanted to fix the feeling. And so here he's learned to like sit with the feeling and without needing to solve it or fix it. And so I think, you know, one of my friends, Andrew Horn, he started something called Junto, which is these men's groups. I think there's a lot of beautiful work out there for men, and men need it too. I'd be curious what you think here in the front as well, Mr.
Hi. I'm a little short, so I'm going to stand on my tippy toes here. So you kind of touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but, you know, there is productive worry and unproductive worry. And I feel like in the moment, it can be really hard to distinguish what you're actually feeling. Because, you know, no matter how prepared you are, you might still be worried about giving the presentation or whatever it may be. So do you have tips for in the moment figuring out what kind of worry you're experiencing?
Well, I think to go to what you were saying real quick about like if you're having a presentation. So for me, nerves mean I care. If I'm worried, it means it's meaningful, it's important. I worry every time I'm about to get a talk. I feel butterflies, I feel anxious, and that energy is creative energy, and that tells me that I can, that A, this is important, B, I'm going toward growth, and C, I can use this as fuel. And so I don't think it's about, you know, like getting rid of, or like, if I don't need to interpret the worry before I get on stage. It's just, to me, a signal of, oh, I'm moving in the direction of growth, and this is meaningful to me, so I'm gonna step up, and I'm gonna move with the worry. I'm gonna let it come with me.
Thank you.
Hi. How have you, if you've ever been afraid of failure, how have you overcome that fear?
Yeah, I've probably been afraid of anything that I've ever pursued. And again, the fear to me is compass of go there. So I just, my sort of mantra is go toward fear. And it's, again, it's, I don't even think you overcome the fear as much as you learn to let it come along for the ride. And there's this great Rumi quote about how every day is a guest house. We welcome a new arrival. And so fear may come in to sweep us of our sorrows. And the whole idea is that we welcome the emotion in like an honored guest. And so what I've learned to do is that if fear is knocking at the door, if I don't answer the door, it's going to get louder and louder and louder. And so I can open the door and say, hey, fear, I see you. Thank you for illuminating the fact that I really care about this. And then I can choose whether or not I let fear in. So I can say, listen, like, thank you for showing up and telling me, but right now we're gonna go do this, and so you're not allowed to run the show. So it's really about setting boundaries with myself, setting boundaries with the emotions, but just acknowledging them. So acknowledge them and then decide what you wanna do with them and not let them run the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Amber. I really enjoyed the last half hour of your talk, and I'll tell you why. About a year and a half ago, after going through a divorce after 42 years, I was part of a kind of a book club that was reading a book which was teaching you to control your thoughts. Mm. Think about what you're thinking about. And when those negative thoughts, fears come in, be cognizant of that and say, no, go away. I'm not going to think about you. Mm. And that hasn't worked real well for a year and a half. Now I think I know why. So I'm looking forward to, you have your book, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to reading that and to understanding now, rather than turning those thoughts and saying, no, turn around and embrace them and say, okay, what's going on here? What mm-hmm. do you have to tell me? And not be afraid of those thoughts. Not let them consume me, but yes. At the same time, deal with them. Because I think for so long, I was just, you know, pushing them off to the side. So thank you. It was very eye-opening. I really appreciate your talk. Thank you
so much. Mm-hmm.
Hi there.
Hi.
There we go. I'm wondering if you're in a situation in which you are doing something that you've done forever and you've loved it, but recently, by you I mean me, I'm not going to pretend like I'm not going through this. Me, I'm going through a situation in which I've been doing something forever and I've moved up in a level to mm-hmm. which it's now a higher level, but now because I'm at that higher level, I feel constant anxiety of, I don't deserve to be here, I don't deserve to be here, I don't deserve to be here, and it's gotten to a point where I don't enjoy it anymore. Mm. My question is that fear and doubt, is that telling of something that maybe this isn't for me, maybe my heart's not in this anymore? Do I let that, is it indicative of that? Or is it indicative of the fact that I've let the fear kind of take control too much of it?
Well, the way that you phrased it, what I heard is that you're at this new level, and so that's what's triggered and sparked the fear, is not I'm doing this thing that I don't really want to be doing that I think I should be doing, and thus I'm feeling all these things. So, I mean, I don't know which it is for you, but, you know, any time we're breaking through to a new level of growth, there's going to be new worries, fears, and doubts. It's like a lifelong journey, and we just have to keep saying hi to them because, again, they're telling us, wow, you've reached a new level, and now we're going to hang out here because there's new worries. And so, I mean, one of my favorite practices, can we name what this character is for you? Can we create a character?
Sure.
Okay.
Like, do you want to give it an emotion name or like a human name?
You're going to give it a name. So this character is, you said, is like fear of, do I deserve to be here?
Okay.
So what is that character's name? Whatever comes first.
I was going to say Camper because that's the first name that I saw. You know what?
Let's not name it Amber.
Then I was going to ask someone in the audience what their name was.
Well, okay,
so
close your eyes. Okay. Close your eyes.
Okay.
Now let's go.
Okay, the name is Mrs. Doubtfire.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mrs. Doubtfire. Now ask Mrs. Doubtfire. And this is a little, we're going to try this on because I don't know if this is going to work. Mrs. Doubtfire, ask it what it's most afraid of.
Right now in the microphone. Hi, Mrs. Doubtfire. Thank you for joining me to my tea time.
Yes!
What are you most afraid of? And now I'm going to answer that?
Yeah.
I think that I'm most afraid of getting out there and performing, not doing well, and then misrepresenting the group that I've, the new level of group that I've moved into.
So that tells me, going back to, should I be doing this? Is this for me? Is my heart in it?
Or should I go back down to the other level?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's more the fear of success that's the fear, not the fear of being out of alignment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, with Mrs. Doubtfire, thank you, Mrs. Doubtfire, for that piece of wisdom.
Thank you, Mrs. Doubtfire, for that piece of wisdom.
Now ask it, ask Mrs. Doubtfire how you can work well together in this new level.
Okay, how can we work together well in this new level? And now I have to answer it.
Yep.
This is a lot of pressure.
Is that what Mrs. Doubtfire says?
That's what I'm saying, because
okay.
There's people staring at me. thank you. I really don't know. That's where I think I'm stuck at, is I don't know how, because what I've been told is that even Serena Williams kind of said just now that you need to, like, take that fear and be okay with it, but keep going. Like, break through that wall.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like I can't break through a wall, because I'm not good enough right now.
Mm. And where does that story come from of not being good enough?
Oh my God, are we gonna go to my childhood? this is pretty weird.
we can pause here if you're not coming.
Yeah. I think it just comes from. Oh my God, here we go. When I got into college, everybody, including my teachers, told me that I wasn't supposed to go to Berkeley. Mm. They told me it was a fluke.
Mm.
Oh, now I'm gonna start crying.
That's it. So now you're still living out that story.
I guess so, yeah.
So the you that was told that you were a fluke, what does that you need to know? Hold on, I want to hear it from her.
That I earned it.
That you earned it. So you earned this next level.
Oh, I did not mean to cry into my 100 people. All right. I think I've had enough. I think I'm going to sit down. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being so real and going there.
Today is such a weird day because there's so many people that I admire so much that are expressing their fear. And it's like, how can this, how is Serena Williams afraid? And I just want to say, after watching you go through that, I'm like, I know why she got promoted. I know why she's there, because it's so evident that you're smart and witty and can think on your toes. So,
and really brave.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's crazy to watch women where you're like, you're amazing. Like, how do you not see it? But I guess we all have the capacity to be that way. So that wasn't my question. One, I wanted to say, you have the best vibe and energy. I love it. This is actually just a follow-up to what you were saying about the men's group. Mm. Ironically, so many men in my life go to a men's group where they can, like, take on toxic masculinity and, like, do all these like higher astral things, whatever they're doing. I'm wondering, where are those groups for women? Mm. You know, obviously with your friends, like, you talk about all those things, but, like, where are women pushing each other to show up and be fearless? And do you have any great resources similar to, like, the men's clubs or the men's groups?
Wow, I wish nothing is coming to mind, and that you just helped me identify a problem to solve. Events like this, hopefully, but does anyone have any?
Lean in circles.
Yeah, lean in circles, and she said
mastermind groups, yeah.
There's also the Brené Brown club. I know there's one in Seattle.
So they all read Brené's books and talk about it.
Yeah. Soon there's going to be wonder circles, but they're not they're not in effect yet.
Can you just say that one more time? Sorry.
Lean in circles.
Hi.
Hi.
Amber, thank you so much for sharing the gift inside you with all of us. It has definitely sparked something in me today, I feel. So thank you so much. And I really liked how you compared worry and tried to contrast it with wonder. Mm-hmm. And when you told us to take a little note, I was doing that. And what it seems to me, it was... the debate between worry and anger and wonder in my head is just, they're just very talkative. Mm-hmm. They just keep talking at each other. So I'm not able to listen clearly.
Yeah.
So how do you, I guess my question is, how do you hear it from a clear perspective? Because it's so confusing. Mm-hmm. When you're like... worried, but at the same time you're like, no, I could do this. Mm-hmm. But you know, there can be serious consequences sometimes to taking a step from worry to wonder.
Mm. So just so I'm hearing your question right, the question is, when it's so noisy, what to do?
Yeah.
Do you journal?
I do, but it just goes on for pages, and then I'm just like. I'm like, now I'm lost. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so Julia Cameron wrote a book called The Artist's Way, and she encourages morning pages, which is every day three stream of consciousness pages. And I've been doing this religiously for a long time. And the point is just that, to get it out of here and on paper. And I think, you know, for me, the beauty of the practice is not trying to interpret it, understand it, analyze it, but just getting it out.
Getting it out.
And so it sounds like there's a lot of chatter. And so what other ways can you get it out is my question for you. Oh. So journaling, what else?
I try to talk to my friends, but okay. It seems like nowadays everybody I talk to, everybody's in this chaotic stage. Mm-hmm. So I'm not getting...
Yeah.
I'm not getting a clear answer And you know, you go to a therapist, and the therapist says, "I can't answer that for you. You have to answer." And I'm like,
"It is what I just did to you."
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say, "Here's the thing," to quiet down the noise. But it sounds like, I mean, I honestly don't know what to.
Yeah. No, I mean,
wait, can we name? Can
let
we name
me,
the
let me give you an example.
Can we name the chatterbox? The chatterbox.
Let me give you an example. From your story, you were saying you left a very... actually, it's similar to one of my many worry wonders situations. But you said you left a very stable corporate tech job and you started to do this. at this age, when, you know, everybody wants to be independent and, you know, you want to support yourself and... you don't want to leave that stable paycheck and corporate job and stop the trajectory where you know you're already good, you're climbing the ladder. Mm-hmm. But you're like, I don't know, do I want to keep making this money? It's like, obviously. But but then at the other hand, it's like, but I also want to do this other creative thing. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide? What? And there's not enough time. I've tried doing both. It just makes me more crazy.
Okay.
So how did you decide, like, the worry, wondered, and how do you... Because there's only so much time in life,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, I mean, I can only speak on behalf of what worked for me, but I think it, you know, and I don't want to, like, bash corporate world. I think corporate world can be a beautiful place, and I think it ultimately comes down to what you value. Do you value security and comfort more than risk and the mystery? And so which do you value more, and what's more important? And I would challenge you on saying that you don't have time for the creativity and the corporate, because we always make time for the things that matter. Yeah. And so when you say I don't have time, what I hear is it's not important enough.
Got it.
And so, you know, what happened for me is that I was just writing a blog. I started 12 years ago, a Tumblr. I was writing a Tumblr, and I was just like doing little things here and there, never thinking I was gonna leave tech and marketing in the path that I was creating until that began creating opportunity that was completely unexpected. And so it got to a point where I could make a choice because there was actually also, I mean, there were a lot of risks there, but I was able to make money with my creativity and I was able to do something with it. And so I would, alongside what you're already doing, just tiny things, even if it's like 10 minutes a day of something, anything, to carve out that space for your creativity.
Okay.
Because that's going to feed everything else as well.
Great. I have one other follow-up question. You said like sadness really kind of inspired you to go on write your book. I was curious, like sometimes when I try to listen to my sadness and journal, there's almost like a fear which comes inside because you're told you're supposed to be happy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like being sad is like not sexy.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
like, you know. So you almost get scared of becoming a sad person if you think too many sad thoughts.
Mm.
So how do you deal with managing the sadness for when it visits you?
So two thoughts. One is, back to, I'm hearing a belief you inherited, which is that I shouldn't feel sad.
Yeah.
And so that is going to create pressure, and that's going to make you feel wrong if you feel it.
Right.
So I think even just when you feel sadness, and if you're creating, I shouldn't feel this way, remembering that that was conditioned onto you,
right.
And you can choose to believe something different. You can believe, actually, no, all my feelings are worthy and valid and welcome here.
Perfect.
So that's a new belief that you can begin to try on.
Makes sense.
And then the second, in terms of, it's again remembering that it's a storm coming through, and maybe sadness will be here for 3 days, maybe it's 3 minutes, maybe it's, you know, longer, but remembering and trusting that it has an end. Because if we feed it and spiral into it and create stories about it, and this is wrong, and I shouldn't feel this way, and this is bad, then it's going to go on for weeks.
Right.
But if we're like, oh, sadness is just here, I'm going to let it move through, again, we are the vessel experiencing that sensation. And so trust that it has an ending.
Yes. Thank you so much. Very helpful.
Hi. Thank you for your talk. It was really thought-provoking, and I'm looking forward to thinking about it. I have a question hopefully I can articulate.
Mm-hmm.
I think several of the types of worry that we've kind of talked about or listened to, a lot of them feel very forward-looking. I'm not ready, or what if that doesn't go the way I want it to? And so recently I find myself in a place where I'm spending a lot more time worrying about stuff that's done, or ruminating, which came up in one of the earlier sessions, and it's done. So what's the point of worrying about it, unless it's going to affect you in the future? And so I'm just wondering if you have any advice for how to use wonder to combat this worry that you really can't do anything about.
Well, I think first off, just so worry is that anxiety about the past, something that's already happened, or it's the about the future. So it definitely happens in both ways. In terms of how to work with it, what do you think is the reason why, like what are you afraid of the things that have already happened?
Just that I could be happier than I am now if I'd done something different.
So it's regret that you're feeling. Okay.
Or I don't even know if it's regret. It's you can't live all the futures.
Right.
So, you know, it's
I could have made a different choice.
Yeah, you get a little stuck, right?
Right. So what would it look like for you to want what you have?
That's interesting. I always think about having what I want. I think I would just, going back to the previous question, it would have to get a lot quieter in my head.
Do you journal?
No.
Start there.
Okay.
Yeah, start there. Just let it, get it out on paper. Move it from your head into something you can look at.
I feel like it's the day goes by really fast, and we're all super busy. And that sounds like a good way to maybe slow it down.
Slow it down, totally. I mean, 10 minutes can slow everything down.
Thank you.
Hi.
I think this is our last question. 2 minutes, okay.
So... first of all, like, thank you for kind of like shifting the perspective a lot, because I know oftentimes we get like so lost in all of our worries. But my question was, like, being a senior in high school, there's like a lot of worry that is like surrounding us all the time. And I guess, like, how do we, you know, find ways to like cope with so much worry? Like, it's easier when it's like one thing at a time, but sometimes it's often overwhelming mm-hmm. when there's so much stuff going on, and kind of how to use the concept of wonder over worry with so many worries surrounding mm-hmm. you.
So here's a tool that I use. I literally take out a sheet of paper and I write down every single worry. Mm-hmm. And then I go through each one and I say, can I do something about this? Can I do something about this? Can I do something about this? And if I can, then I have an action step. And if I don't, then it's literally like, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. And I also have a worry jar that uh-huh. I'll throw things in. And it's almost like someone, I think it's Elizabeth Gilbert, calls it the God jar.
Yeah.
And like, it's like the universe has got it now. Mm-hmm. And just like letting it go, but it's the act of just throwing it into something mm-hmm. because I can't control it. And I can try to pretend that I can, but I'm just gonna let it go. So those are two tools to try on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. It's been amazing to share space with you. Thank you.